right, this is Pure Decking, show number 458 for Thursday, November the 18th, 1978. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and I've been in training all week, so my brain's a little frazzled, not a fan of how that guy gives test questions. I'm just going to say it. He's more interested in trying to teach you how to reason out a way around the test question rather than just, you know, what the right answer is based on the technology or the question. So, anyways, I'm drinking a little bit of Maker's 46. Madman, what's up?
Nothing much. Just wondering how Leo Ryan's doing.
That's terrible, isn't it?
Nah, the world's full of wonderful things, and that wasn't one of them.
I've clearly missed something.
Okay, so the little joke we do in the intro about the date.
Oh, I didn't catch any of that because I was doing sound quality check.
Madman, would you enlighten what happened on this day in history for the audience?
In 1978, a group of former temple members and converted relatives of current members convicted U.S. Congressman Leo Ryan, a Democrat of California, who traveled to Jonestown to investigate the settlement. And,
oh. Now I know why that name's ringing a bell. He almost got on the plane. Almost.
He got very close, but they did carry out the sentence prior to that. And then the sale of great Kool-Aid in that area went up.
You can't say they didn't try.
No, you can't say that. for God's sake. Anyways.
I tell you what I am getting sick of, dude. Hearing all these fucking shills on the right talk about the only thing we need to do now to fix everything is more LSD and hugs. I'm like, fuck what? Off. You're just modern. Dude, you listen to Joe Rogan and all those fuckheads. That's all they're talking about. It's fucking, yeah, man, we solve everything with DMT and fucking shrooms, man. And I was like, you guys are just modern day fucking hippies. Fuck off.
I mean, I think we would solve a lot of problems if we had honest reporting and people knew what the fuck was going on and could respond appropriately, but that's... Don't know what that has to do with DMT and shrooms.
Yeah.
That's what you'll be on whenever this happens.
Yeah. So here's what's going to happen. You're going to own nothing and like it, but we're going to have you high as a kite, so you're not going to know why. Anyways,
you're saying that like it's not going to happen.
I need to cut that down to
that's just immaculate conception in prison.
I need to cut that down to just the repeatedly part. I think I would get more utility out of the clip with it that way. I also need to go cut up that clip of the judge from the Rittenhouse trial because there's some good stuff in there that'd be good on a soundboard. Not the one I wanted, which was him yelling, "Oh, come on." There is just not a good version of the audio of that. But
and there never will be, dude. As I said, the gain is 100 in those places because they want to catch everything.
The clip of him tearing up and down the lawyer over the constitutional issues, though, that's got some soundbite gold in it. So I need to go cut that up because that one actually is listenable. But I forgot to do it before the show. And anyways, not, you know, just, I mean, even out of context, it just it'll be great. But anyways, so just a programming note. We were discussing this earlier, and I think we all agree we've been letting the show get a little long. So I'm going to be making an effort to try to keep the show under an hour, or at least at an hour. So if I start dropping stories or we only do two stories because we end up deep diving into something, well, that's just what's going to happen. So, but I mean, I've already been worn out this week from damn training stuff just because, I mean, they're long-ass classes. But if I, you know, get the certification I'm taking the training for, it's worth it career-wise. So there's that. It's just, you know, ugh. But we've been going late a lot, and so that's, I don't know. I mean, we were talking about it earlier, are you? And I just, like, I kind of agree with you that we're kind of getting away from that original time frame. And if we're going to go longer, we either need to start earlier or get more people involved. So, I don't know. Thoughts, Madman? Are you?
Yeah. No, I'm, see how it goes, man.
All right.
I have to watch the time.
Yep. Madman's already wandered off. So, oh, anyways. So I guess we'll just jump into the first one here. It's from Reuters. It's all over the place, but it's hilarious. Hackers compromise FBI email system and send thousands of messages. Hackers compromised a Federal Bureau of Investigation email system on Saturday and sent tens of thousands of messages warning of a possible cyber attack, according to the agency and security specialists. Fake emails appeared to come from legitimate FBI addresses ending in ic.fbi.gov, the government said in a statement. Although the hardware impacted by the incident, quote, was taken offline quickly upon discovery of the issue, unquote, the FBI said this is an ongoing situation. Hackers sent tens of thousands of emails warning of a possible cyber attack, threat tracking organization Spanhouse Project said on its Twitter account. A copy of an email posted by Spanhouse on Twitter showed the subject line of urgent threat actor in systems and appeared to end with the sign-off from the Department of Homeland Security. FBI is part of the Department of Justice. Bloomberg News reported on the incident on Saturday. Both the FBI and Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency are aware of the incident, the FBI said. I would imagine they're aware. So, now the reason I find this funny is not because I think anybody's email system getting hacked is funny. It's because people assume that the FBI would be doing it any better than anybody else. I mean, let's be real. They hacked the FBI email system, not through some grand James Bond-esque mission or super hacker man surfing time on a Commodore 64. No, they sent a phishing email, and some secretary opened it and clicked the link, right?
Yep.
And so they get into the email system, and rather than sit there and you know, read people's emails or subtly alter things or fuck with investigations, they blast out an email saying, ha ha, I'm in your system, neener, neener, neener. I mean, it's obnoxious, but it's largely harmless. You know, you probably put a whole bunch of socks, private company socks on audit, or on audit, on alert, because they got an email from the FBI warning them of possible attacks.
Did this email go out at 3:30 on a Friday afternoon?
Oh, it might have, because they said it was on Saturday.
If it did, okay. Well done, gentlemen.
Yeah,
because
you did probably ruin a lot of people's weekends. Because they had to go in there and then monitor all their systems and check what the hell was going on. So there is that aspect of it. But, I mean, an email system's an email system. The FBI isn't running a hardened, super special edition, nobody else has it, you know, what's the National Security Agency term, NOBUS, email system. They're running Microsoft Exchange, just like everybody fucking else in any kind of structured environment. They're running Exchange tied to Active Directory and probably with Office 365, account tied to it somewhere. Maybe not. They might not have tied to 365 yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if they were running in mixed mode with a 365 mail transport. Because everybody is. Government or not. Or do they have smart cards tied to their identities? Yeah, properly. Or probably. But, you know, to authenticate to an email system? I mean, really? It's probably... A lot of the authentication systems are not in, don't replace authentication. They sit on top of. So if you have a smart card authentication system where your system only works with a smart card plugged into it, well, the back-end services probably still accept a Kerberos ticket from your account, right? So whether or not you've authored the smart card or, you know, username and password or high-end retina scan, once you've got the Kerberos tickets, or a session cookie for the god matter, that matter, yeah, it's you just you authenticate and that's that. So, you know, just because it's the FBI means it's probably not anything special. In fact, being that it's a government agency, it's probably underfunded and understaffed. So, if anything, they're probably easier to hack than some of the high-end corporate stuff these days.
Are you sure they're even up to date? Often do you think those servers get upgraded?
I would imagine whenever they get a memo from the Department of Homeland Security saying, here's the new standards, comply in whatever amount of time, or, you know, we're going to have an issue. Seriously, that's how a lot of these things go. Until somebody threatens them with an audit or a risk procedure or their budget, half the time getting their sysadmins to get off their butt and upgrade their systems is... Okay, I'm being a little mean, because when you have large systems that have several hundreds, if not thousands, of users connecting to them, any kind of change is risky, including in the vendor-supplied patches. So I shouldn't be that rough on them. But it's still fun to say it that way. But yeah, it's a pain in the ass to maintain this stuff. And you know there's a bookkeeper somewhere saying, we're not an IT shop, we're, you know, the FBI, we do investigations, we do important police work, we investigate local terrorism, we harass school boards.
Wait. I think you're giving them a bit too much for the important police work.
Well, this is what they think of themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Overinflated. You know,
so we're not going to waste any more money on this IT shit than we have to. Because it's that same mentality everywhere. Unless you've got management that's been through, you know, IT hell, where their systems are unreliable or they, you know, they've been hacked and had to deal with it. There's two types of people in this world. Those who keep backups and those who've never had a hard drive die on them. I mean, you know, there's two types of senior management in large organizations. Those who respect, you know, proper information technology and security, and those who've never had a breach.
And it's not just their network. The FBI's connected to every police, sheriff's department in the U.S. There are a lot of databases.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, whenever you're running fingerprints, if it's outside of your local area, they're hitting an FBI database.
So yeah. The real question here is, what else did they have access to, and did they take advantage of it? From the fact that they sent out this blast email, it means one of two things. Either they meant no harm and they were just having fun, or two, they'd already accomplished what they came to do and just thought they would embarrass them by rubbing their nose in it.
Either way, somebody unauthorized was in your network, assumed the worst, and then assumed the position.
Your network has been compromised and can no longer be trusted. Tear it down and build a new one.
Exactly, dude. I'm sorry, but it's the only thing you can do. You got to nuke it from space. It's the only way to be sure.
If you cannot... Okay, in all seriousness, I know it's not the most practical thing, but if you cannot attest to the current status of those systems, they should be wiped and rebuilt. And you should probably look at comparing the firmwares of switches, routers, printers, Wi-Fi access points, other embedded devices throughout the network, although I think that should be most of them on a corporate network. Security cameras, IP security cameras, that's another big one. You should seriously look at either wiping those things out and replacing their firmwares with new ones, or at least comparing what's installed to what should be on them.
You want to bet all the door locking mechanisms are on that as well?
Oh, yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah, bet you they do not have that air-gapped from their main.
They might. It depends on... I mean, a lot of door strike systems, they'll run a low-voltage line from the door strikes back to the management system. You know, it's yeah, not most... like each one's individual at the door. Usually it's just one big system with a bunch of low voltage wiring. Well,
because they use card verification to open doors, from what I understand, with their security protocol. Like, so they work on a color system all the way up. And say I was hypothetically here on the color system thing, like, say you're green means you have access to this, this, and this, and this, but your card won't work on any other door.
Sure.
So there's no having to memorize codes or anything like that, so you can't get compromised. And then it logs time and date and which person came through that door.
Well, usually
I don't know how they stop tailgaters, though.
Well, if they're doing it correctly, it should be along the lines of you do the badge swipe and then some other method of, you know, whether it's a fingerprint scanner. I mean, I've seen that at data centers.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you got to know a PIN code to at least get in the front door. So it's a swipe and a PIN code to get through the first barrier. Then maybe on the inside, it's just a swipe.
But we've all tailgated.
Oh, like, sure.
Those systems aren't foolproof unless you got a man trap in there.
Unless you got a man trap and someone enforcing it.
Exactly.
The other thing,
and I'd want to hope the FBI has something like that on all offices, but
well,
practicality says no.
At least on the entrances to the buildings and then to their secured rooms for like evidence lockup and server rooms and shit like that, you would hope. But depending on how their network is set up, if they don't have proper segmentation, VoIP systems, that's the other one they need to check. Because if these guys were digging around your network, flashing firmware and compromising copiers, printers, phones. I mean, if you get the right kind of device compromised, you can dwell there forever and have your backdoor back onto their network whenever you want.
But just something we were talking about off the show more. So notice you were using that word hope and trust a lot. They hope that it's going to be okay. They trust that their networks will be safe. That hope and trust, man.
I've been drinking. Does that count?
Pinging back into the building won't be as big an issue. FBI buildings are the first floor, generally public. You're going through metal detectors and armed guards to get in. And then it's upstairs that the card reader and all that stuff gets into play. So I'm thinking the security should be watching for tailgaters at that point.
It was just around the two different styles of lifestyle morphs there on the hope and trust and then the faith and belief.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? We're using hope and trust a lot. So this is not a way to really want to do shit. Because you're hoping and trusting. These aren't.
You think this could be used to compromise any investigations?
Like, that's what I mean. Madman, sure someone got in there.
Accurate your evidence is right now in this file. Your network was corrupted. Can we do a double check on this?
They'll just airdrop it to you. You know, no need to follow proper chain of custody
just
or something.
Email it to you by a phone, dude. And it won't be in the proper resolution or anything. But then again, we didn't just show you, some bad resolution footage. But we didn't know how to do that. Why do you have resolution software on your laptop, sir? don't look at that. How come it just took a couple of people watching a playback on some fucking podcast show to get this pointed out to the actual judge? You know, God damn it. If it just wasn't incompetence, you'd say it's deliberate. Yeah.
Well, anyway, we're already pivoting. So, Madman, did you have anything else before we move on?
No, we're good. Let's get the next one.
Next one is from How To Geek. Windows 11 will soon block all default browser workarounds. So if you're not familiar, one of the things Microsoft is changing with Windows 11 is that on previous versions of Windows, you could set a default web browser. On Windows 11, you have to set the default program for every file type you would normally associate with the web browser. So your HTML, your LNK, your HTTP, I mean, all of the file types that are normally, you know, SHTML, XML, all that fun stuff, right? So it's something like 30 places you have to set, at least, was it that many? I don't remember. It was a lot. You had to set it in several places in Windows 11 to change your default browser from Edge. I mean, this is, you know, we're looking at Windows ME with Internet Explorer levels of integration again. You know, like government sued them over monopoly practices levels of integration again.
Right.
So, even that one, you can still use another browser. It sounds like they're trying to even prevent that.
Well, they're trying to prevent you from changing the default. You know, so that any links you click in any program outside of the browser you already have open, any saved shortcuts, any bookmarks, they want all of it in Edge. Because the last time anybody took a look at these browsers for data collection, Edge was the only one that edged out, you know, stock Google Chrome. Firefox, Brave, and Chromium were all fairly decent at what they sent back. Mostly it was just usage statistics, some anonymous stuff, and depending on what you had turned on, they might get browser stuff based on some of your add-ons and the history checks. But Google Chrome was basically, you know, everything you sent was going back to Google because it was tracking your history for browser syncing. And, you know, Firefox, you could turn that on, but Edge was doing, like, more data collection than Google Chrome. I'd have to find the article again, which, okay, that's hearsay, but you know, I do remember reading that. So here's the article. Microsoft really wants you to use Edge. It wants you to use it so badly that it's making switching your default browser an incredibly annoying process. And those workarounds out there, you can soon forget about those. Daniel Ackerson, the creator of Edge Deflector, wrote a blog post. He said that the latest Windows 11 Insider Previewer builds prevent apps like Edge Deflector and other workarounds from getting around Microsoft's complicated process of changing the default browser and fighting off the Microsoft Edge links. Here's what the post says. Something changed between Windows 11 builds 22483 and 22494, both Windows Insider Preview builds. The build changelog makes a few mentions of changes to the Protocol and File Association's default apps system. However, it omits the headline news. You can no longer bypass Microsoft Edge using apps like Edge Deflector. With the current workarounds, such as Edge Deflector's and Firefox's trick, the tools intercept OS-level URL requests that force you to use Edge. Edge Deflector developer Ackerson says Edge Deflector is an app that intercepts the Microsoft Edge links found throughout Windows 10 and 11 shells and other Microsoft apps and redirects them to regular HTTPS links that open in your default web browser. Microsoft uses these links instead of the regular web links to force users to open them in the Edge web browser. Also, if anybody set up a new Windows 10 machine lately, you'll know that at some point Microsoft started putting in nagware when you go change your default browser to Firefox to say, oh no, you really need to use Edge. And, you know, it's like, and the default option is keep using Edge. You have to kind of read it and figure out what button to click to actually get it to change to Firefox because it really, you know, they're really trying to keep you in Edge. Yeah, Ackerson says Windows 10 and 11 no longer care what the default web browser setting, which is sure to make a lot of users extremely upset. Currently, this changes in Insider builds 22483 and 22494, so on their way to the final version of Windows 11. And of course, Microsoft could change its mind and decide that the user outrage isn't worth the change, but only time will tell. So for anybody who wasn't aware, Edge Deflector was an app that would re-register this when I was saying Microsoft Edge links, they're actually referring to a file type within the OS. It's not one that's normally exposed. It's one that's supposedly linked to the Edge browser. Well, they were rewriting them to just HTTPS so that whatever you had as set as your browser for that would open. But Microsoft is apparently making it so you can't change it now. But if you're not aware, like, a lot of the Windows Control Panel stuff, links in Microsoft Office, the Windows Help System, and, of course, all the little, you know, default nag pushware, the push software tiles in your Start menu, links in the little news app, the weather thing down in the Start menu they added, or the taskbar they added. All that stuff will open in Edge even if you set your browser to something else because Microsoft has actually created a different file handler that opens in Edge for all of this stuff. And that's what they're saying, is that they've coded it to use Edge no matter what you've got your browser, your default browser set to. This Edge deflector, and Firefox had one that it was doing too, were rewriting these links so that they would open up in the browser you want to use as opposed to Edge.
Yeah, I'd be much more shocked that it doesn't do what I want it to do.
Mm-hmm. I tell you,
I have nothing on this one, man. Just rage and hate.
Linux is going to be looking more and more comfortable all the time. I wish I'd get the hardware sorted out, and you know, some of the anti-cheat and other stuff that doesn't work quite correctly under Proton and things like that sorted out. But you know, the more Microsoft turns its operating system to a giant ass billboard for shit it's pushing, Teams and Microsoft Office and OneDrive being the big stuff. Office 365, I should say, which admittedly makes perfect sense in the corporate world. Yeah, my work laptop is tied into OneDrive and Teams and Office 365 because that's what the company uses. I don't use any of that shit on my home machine. I shouldn't have to take 20 minutes and run a few specialized apps I found on GitHub to turn all that shit off in my desktop operating system. For a home version, anyways. It's like, no, it's really Windows Home. It's not Windows Pro. Don't shove me into all this pro shit. But, you know, they don't care. Because the longer they keep you on Edge, the more data they collect, which is more money in their pocket.
Yep.
Madman, you got anything on this? Are you ready to go to the next one?
I'm just wondering, is there going to be enough support for Linux when it comes to device drivers or even video game and anti-cheat support? Because
well,
hasn't developed yet. I know Steam's pushing their OS, which may develop it, but
well, and the Steam Deck got delayed, but it's a chicken and egg problem, right? You know, right now, if you're a software developer, you say, well, Linux is approximately 1-2% of the total user base, and they've got, you know, Proton and Wine and other ways of running Windows, or they can just dual boot, because a lot of Linux users do dual boot to run other software. So why would I target them, or Macs for that matter, with Macs being like, what, 5% of the PC space? Or the
Mac, total? I could see it growing because of the tablets.
Well, the PC space has actually shrunk, because a lot of people who used to use laptops now use iPads or Android tablets. Or just phones, for that matter. You know, a lot of people used to use a laptop for Facebook and you know, Amazon and stuff like that. Now they do it all on their phone. And power users do it on iPads. And then, you know, your laptop, well, that's for work. You know, I know several people who used to use, you know, a laptop. Now they use an iPhone or an Android phone. But, you know, and they're happy with it. It doesn't bother them because they're not into it like we are. And if they want a game, well, they got an Xbox or a PlayStation. And if all you want to do is game,
filthy animal.
Yeah, come, please join the PC Master Race. The graphics are better. What's the Flash Gets
cartoons?
For at
cartoons? Least a year until you have to upgrade everything and realize you can't fucking get cards for fucking miners. God damn it.
Well, it, honestly,
just
though,
kick my own dick.
Honestly,
We have a better mod community.
If all you want to do is just play the latest AAA games, you might be better off on an Xbox or a PlayStation than PC.
I think you are, man. Unless you've got bullshit amounts of money.
Assuming you can get one right now. I mean, you know, if you, it's like, you want an Xbox? Sure, go find the scalper's market. Otherwise, you got to wait and try to catch them in stock. I actually seriously thought about buying a PlayStation 5 at one point. And
nope, it requires internet connection.
Well, not only does it require internet connection, you either have to try to time the trucks at a Walmart or a Best Buy or Target or something like that. Or GameStop, you sign up for their premium membership, and then you can buy them online, but only if you buy a bundle. And I think Best Buy started doing this shit too, where you had to join their membership, and they sell it to you only in a bundle. They won't sell you just the console anymore. And so, you know, it goes from being a, I might like to pick up the console and try it out, to, okay, let me join this cult and sign a monthly membership. It's like, what the fuck happened? It's like, what happened to the days you could just buy a Nintendo and play it? I mean, what the hell?
I'm curious about my unmolested PlayStation 3 would go for. Never touched the internet. It's never had an update.
Probably a lot on the collector's market, because you actually have one that could still load Linux.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. I mean, they got sued over that, because they had advertised loading Linux and then took it away.
Yeah, and same with all the games. They've never been updated or anything, so they all play from their original disk load.
So.
Yeah. Means Diablo 3 had all the updates and the nerfing.
So make sure you don't ever let the battery in the thing die. The little clock battery. Get the alligator clips out and keep it energized while you swap it when the lithium gets low, or just pick a time to do it because, you know, don't wait for it to die. Figure out how to swap it without it losing power to. Anyways. Next topic.
Next topic.
All right, next one is from The Verge. Streamlabs has promised to remove OBS from the name of its live streaming software, Streamlabs OBS, following the backlash from streamers and the open source live streaming platform OBS Studios. OBS Studio says it's asked Streamlabs not to use its name, which stands for Open Broadcaster Software, only to have the company do so anyways. Streamlabs has also been accused of copying the website and of another broadcasting software, with all the drama hashtagged on Twitter. The controversy started when Lightstream, another live streaming app maker, tweeted out screenshots of its website right beside Streamlabs saying, "Hey, can I copy your homework?" suggesting that Streamlab had copied Lightstream. Stu Grubbs, CEO of Lightstream, later retweeted the image, stating that the team at Streamlabs should be ashamed, not satisfied enough to write OBS Project's hard work. And then OBS actually complained that they were they're getting users coming to the OBS forums and the Discord and the chat channels and Twitch or Twitter complaining about problems with OBS or with Streamlabs. Wanting to know why the OBS guys won't help them. Because OBS Project says, "We're often faced with confused users and even companies who do not understand the difference between the two apps. Support volunteers are sometimes met with angry users demanding refunds. We've had interactions with several companies who did not realize the apps were separate." So, yeah, Streamlabs, because they just grabbed OBS Studio and modified it and put their own stuff on top of it, they didn't make it clear that, you know, it's not the same thing anymore. And so the OBS project, which is an open source project, it's not a company, they've got people demanding refunds from Streamlabs coming to them.
Yes, sir. I can't give you any money.
Well, yeah, of course, it's, you know, you got to think somebody's angry and not paying attention. So, but also, I imagine Streamlabs is probably really difficult to get a hold of, you know, to get your refund from if something goes wrong. Following Grubbs' tweet, OBS got in on the action. In a reply to Grubbs, OBS alleges that Streamlabs' name has been problematic for the brand. OBS says that customers and other companies have confused OBS and Streamlabs due to the OBS abbreviation that Streamlabs tacks on its name. OBS also claims it was approached by Streamlabs when the service first launched and asked if they could use OBS in the name. OBS said it kindly asked them not to, but Streamlabs did it anyways. Then why did you ask? quote, "We've tried to sort this out in private, and they have been uncooperative at every turn," unquote, OBS tweet says. OBS acknowledged that Streamlabs did everything right legally, but instead repeatedly disregarded the spirit of open source or giving back. So, I mean, a good example would be is if we took, I don't know, one of the Linux distros, tacked Galaxy 15 Linux in front of the name, and started selling it, you know, with some kind of a value add service. I don't know, pick something, right?
You get to stream us for free if you use ROS.
Yeah, there you go. Sure, and all it is just a reskinned Ubuntu or something, right? And I mean, granted, there's all kinds of reasons that's not okay. But, well, technically you can do it as long as you're, you know, not, you have to provide the source code to all of your changes, which if all you're doing is reskinning Ubuntu, that's easy enough. But, I mean, yeah, you could technically do it, but, you know, Streamlabs has their service they're putting up on top of it. So, popular streamers quickly got in on the drama. Pokimane, one of the most well-known personalities on Twitch. I must not watch enough Twitch because I don't know who Pokimane is.
Bathwater.
Oh, really?
Yeah. See, you can't fault her, man. She cashed in.
Mm, fair enough.
She's a whore.
That's the Bathwater chick?
Pretty sure.
I thought that was somebody else. I don't know. I don't follow internet
fuck
drama.
Fuck if I know, dude. I don't follow them. I only know the names from hearing them on other streams.
Yeah, Pokimane, one of the most well-known personalities on Twitch, threatened to stop representing and using the platform if Streamlabs doesn't resolve the issue. Streamlabs
Ooh,
has...
a whore threatened us. Yeah.
Well, they must make money off of it because Streamlabs
they
said they're
they
taking...
make bank.
We are taking immediate action to remove OBS from our name. Streamlabs OBS is built on top of the OBS open source platform. Streamlabs OBS is also open source and our code is publicly available. We take responsibility for our actions and support the community. So they just put out the standard mea culpa and they're like, yeah, okay, we're going to drop OBS from our name. Streamlabs later responded to accusations in a tweet stating that it will take immediate action to remove OBS from its product name. It also notes that it's built on... Okay, it's just what I just read. Yeah, Streamlabs weak justification for using the name. Streamlabs was also likely faced with no choice but to change its name, especially when a Twitch stream with over 8 million followers threatened to stop representing the service. The entire drama makes you wonder if Streamlabs intentionally put OBS in the name to attract people to the service. After all, basically everyone in the world of streaming knows OBS. Well, yeah, I mean, OBS won that fight. There used to be, like, what, XSplit and I think Fraps... No, Fraps was just for recording, wasn't it? There were a couple of them that would do it, but, like, OBS won. I mean, everyone uses OBS. Because it you know, works. So, yeah. But that's just funny to me, because it's like...
Alright, so it wasn't Pokimane, it was this chick's name. Eldavina, whatever. That's the bathwater chick. Sorry,
oh,
I have to clarify.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that was the...
Wouldn't want to defame two whores.
Somebody get a puppet. We're going to need to...
I love a good puppet show. One day I'll get my erotic puppet show off the ground. I think it's before its time.
Gross. Anyways,
imagine the smell.
I'd rather not. Thanks. No, really. That's enough. You're not understanding me. Fucking stop.
Oh, she plays Among Us. Uh-huh.
Now, imagine how... Never mind. I had my million-dollar idea for a, you know, a fantastic Twitch stream, but I don't know where we're going to get enough colorblind people to make it work. Anyways, moving on. I think so, Brain, but how are we going to get the monkey into the rubber pants?
Marshmallow, cream, and Vaseline. Duh.
Next article is from Torrent Freak. GTA modders to court. Our game fixes and enhancements are fair use, not piracy. So, Yeah, I wasn't aware of this, but Take-Two actually is filed a lawsuit against the people who've done several of the fan projects to update Grand Theft Auto 3 and Vice City. You know, the graphics enhancements and the mods for the games.
Yeah.
They're suing them.
That's ridiculous.
Well, I imagine it's because they just put out their remaster and they want you buying the remaster, not playing the old one with mods that frankly probably look better than the remaster from some of the screenshots I've seen.
And makes it work better, yeah.
In response to a lawsuit filed by... that's the summary. Here we go. Earlier this year, a group of programmers and Grand Theft Auto enthusiasts released RE3 and REVC, a pair of reverse engineered modifications for Grand Theft Auto 3 and Vice City. I loved Vice City. It was a great game. I didn't play 3 that much. I mean, I did, but not like a lot.
I'm playing through 3 right now.
I played 3 a lot.
Yeah, I'm getting into it now. It's actually really good.
I finished Vice City. It was great.
The Liberty City stories, that's what I'm doing.
Ah, okay. The project allowed fans to enjoy these dated games with significant enhancements and were a hit with fans. However, Take-Two and Rockstar Games took exception and responded with a DMCA takedown filed at GitHub to have the repositories removed. The team fired back using the DMCA counter notice system, and RE3 and REVC were restored. Early September, Take-Two filed a lawsuit against the team, arguing that the aim of the project was to create and distribute pirated versions of GTA 3 and Vice City. The company demanded damages under copyright law, claiming the team willfully and maliciously copied, adapted, and distributed its source code and other content without permission. Take-Two also demanded damages for alleged misrepresentations in the defendant's DMCA counter notices. Through their attorneys, oh God, here's some names, Angelo Poppenhoff, Theo Mora, E-Ray Orkinus, and Adrian Grabber have now responded to the complaint. They address each of the plaintiff's allegations, largely denying them, in some cases stating insufficient knowledge to form a response. Broadly, however, they insist they did not commit any type of copyright infringement, something they expand upon in a short list of affirmative defenses, i.e. defenses based on facts other than those that support the plaintiff's claim. Right off the bat, the defendants assert that anything they did in connection with their GTA 3 and Vice City projects were actions protected by fair use under the Copyright Act. If any copying of copyright-protected material did occur, that was undertaken to allow it for interoperability of software and fixing bugs present in the original titles. As a result, any alleged reverse engineering of the original code represents a transformative use of that content, i.e. it was something added, or it added something new with further purpose or different character and did not substitute for the original use of the work. To the extent that the copying of copyright material did occur, if any, it was necessary to allow for the interoperability of software and was kept to the minimally required amount. The answer further points out that the original games were released over 15 years ago. The plaintiffs stopped releasing patches and bug fixes several years before any of the alleged actions of the defendants took place. Another important fact highlighted in the answer to the complaint is that the defendants' modifications are useless in their own right. In fact, anyone who wished to make use of the RE3 or REVC could not do so without already possessing copies of GTA 3 and Vice City, games that Take-Two stopped making available for purchase on its online stores. This leads to the question of whether the alleged conduct of the defendants affected the market for those games, and if so, in what way? According to the answer, the mods did not affect the market, but to the extent that they did, any shift would have been positive, since people would need to purchase the game to use the mods.
I'm not seeing a problem here.
Well, this is just somebody at EA is a jackass and doesn't understand modding. Any claimed copying of copyright-protected material that did occur, if any, was not undertaken for profit or commercial purposes. The doctrine of fair use bars the relief sought by a plaintiff, the response added. Despite now aggressively suing the creators of RE3 and REVC, Take-Two has previously allowed third parties to develop mods for its software, including Grand Theft and Vice City, without any adverse action in response. That's according to the answer, which states that Take-Two or its subsidiaries have showcased mods and even released portions of its software to the Multi-Theft Auto mod project. These supported, encouraged, or allowed mod projects, upon information and belief, required the reverse engineering of the software just as the defendants are alleged to have undertaken. Among information and belief, defendants had an implied license to undertake any complaint of actions or plaintiffs abandoned its copyright, the answer reads. Yeah, so they got their lawyer to write up legal speak saying, you guys haven't done anything with this for years, and you didn't complain when somebody else did it previously. So, you know, that basically renders your copyright moot. Take-Two's...
defend it, you lose it.
Pretty much. Take-Two's complaint alleges that Angelo Poppenhoff is a resident of Germany, and the response admits that. Okay. However, the claim that Theo Mora is an individual located in New Zealand is denied. Similarly, it's denied that Ire Okronis is located in Turkey and Adrian Graber is located in Germany. So they get the places of some of these people wrong, apparently. While these factors aren't expressly cited in the defense, the defendant's third affirmative defense, the extradition or extraterritorial application of U.S. law, the complaint alleges that the copying of the copyrighted material was undertaken outside the United States. As such, U.S. copyright law lacks reach, the defendant's. That's a good argument. Pirate Bay used that one for years. Quote, the United States Copyright Act should not be applied outside the United States and its territories to the extent plaintiffs seek to extend the application of the United States Copyright Act to cover activities outside of the United States, its claims should be barred, the answer concludes. For months, there's been speculation that the real reason behind Take-Two's legal action against RE3 and REVC developers is that they were planning to officially release enhanced versions of their old games. The latter component was confirmed with the release of Grand Theft Auto the Trilogy, which included remastered versions of GTA 3, Vice City, and San Andreas. Unfortunately, this has been nothing short of a disaster. As reported by Eurogamer, the definitive edition was unplayable due to software problems and is now only available again for purchase after 3 days of downtime. Refund requests have been coming in thick and fast, and the title has been review bombed down to an aggregate score of 0.05 on Metacritic. So,
damn, how many negative reviews do you have to get for that? Because those were fun games.
Go look at the screenshots of the definitive edition, Madman, where they compare them to the original.
They didn't do anything but look at it.
Well, I think what they did was they took the originals and just ran the textures through like an AI upscaler. And then probably just packaged it and shipped it. Because a lot of the screenshots I've seen, like, a lot of the characters look worse. Like, just, you know, flat out, you know, like, they've lost a lot of detail in their textures. You know, there was one I saw where they were showing in the original game, if you shot the windshield of a car, it would break and then, you know, break worse and then, you know, eventually blow out. Whereas in the new one, nothing happens until after the third shot, the windshield just disappears. So, like, it's missing animations, it doesn't play very smoothly. A lot of the stuff I've seen is that these remastered editions of Grand Theft Auto 3 and Vice City are just absolute tire fires.
I mean, the mods I've seen for Liberty City, I don't run any mods. But, you can get some real nice upgrade packs for nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Modding community. I'm just wondering, because all your saves have to be online. If Grand Theft Auto goes down, like, they're signing, can't save game.
Well, they were saying people
couldn't
play it for 3 days.
Yeah, I ran into that issue, too. A couple days back.
Sad. They're taking good properties and just setting them on fire.
Yeah.
Well, they're hoping for the quick buck with the remastered edition and, like I said, probably just some AI upscaler. I doubt they had anybody do any real work on it. It's like, how quickly can you just repackage and publish these? I mean, it's not like they've made a new Grand Theft Auto game in how long? They've just keep republishing 5?
5 is a dumpster fire. Nothing to do in the fucking game.
Somebody was doing a 10-year retrospective of Skyrim, and it's like, my God, it has been 10 years since the original game. And they keep re-releasing it like they just re-released it for the new round of consoles.
Yeah.
They don't make new games anymore. They just keep re-releasing Grand Theft Auto and Skyrim.
Have you seen what happens when Bethesda tries to make a new game? Have you seen what happens?
Well, Fallout 76 notwithstanding. It's like, couldn't you, like, at least upscale, like, Fallout 3? That was a good game. Actually, I've seen a lot of the community mods for that. They're way... And a lot of the Skyrim, too. They're way better than the remasters.
Skyrim mods.
It's like...
Other thing.
It's like, just go hire those modders, buy the mods off of them, and publish that. You don't need to remaster.
They're probably not diverse enough for them.
Oh, God. So
That used to be a way of getting a job for a development company.
It really was. You're right. Nowadays, I guess not.
A Team Fortress 2?
Community mod for Half-Life. That's all right. Actually, I think it was Quake before it was Half-Life. Although Half-Life 1 was based on the Quake engine. It's heavily modified, but... anyways. Last story?
Next story.
Last story is from the Daily Mail, or you sent me this one. I should actually put that in the show notes. Thanks, are you? Let's see. I just lost my train of thought because I realized the show notes needed updated. Most Twitter users are, quote, talking to themselves. Only 25% of Americans use the platform, and a quarter of all users account for 97% of all the tweets. I mean, it's kind of a no-duh.
Yeah, it's just now that they've got data to back it up.
Most Americans do not use Twitter, and of those who do, a minority of highly active users produce nearly all tweets, a new study finds. The study from Pew Research, published Monday, found that 25% of American adults use Twitter, and that among those users, the most active 25%, so a quarter of Americans, at least what they surveyed here, produce 97% of all tweets. Among this highly active group, 80% of all tweets are either retweets or replies to other tweets, with original tweets making up just 14% of posts. And despite their high volume of posting, this group receives only modest engagement from the rest of Twitter, with the average of 37 likes and only one retweet a month. So, yeah, so you know, you've got a handful of people making the content, and everyone else just reposting it and claiming credit. quote, in a lot of ways, you know, these folks are kind of talking to themselves a little bit, unquote, said study author Aaron Smith, he told MarketWatch, noting that high-volume tweeters tended not to have much positive reinforcement or interaction with the broader Twitter universe. High-volume tweeters are also roughly twice as likely as others to say they have personally experienced harassing or abusive behavior on the platform, than less active tweeters. Nevertheless, the high-volume tweeters are less likely to view the overall tone or civility of discussion on the sites as a major problem. They brush off some behaviors that others might find more problematic and are willing to put up with some things that we might find troublesome in other contexts, Smith said. Well, I mean, we still use IRC, so... But, yeah... it gets into politics and stuff here, but it's pretty much what you expect.
They're probably talking heads pushing their brand. I could see the Turks and Ben Shapiro probably pushing it, and then it's just their fans eating the shit up. It's not normal people talking to each other. It's, here's my platform on these other... here's my content on other platforms. Check this out. And, oh, yeah, I'm here to piss on someone to run traffic to everything that I say and do.
Sure. Well, I mean, hell, when we first started G15, I had it set up to automatically post to Twitter whenever we updated anything. I turned it off because nobody cared. And it's like, what's, you know, there's no point in maintaining this. It's not useful. And, I used Twitter for, like, I don't know, all of 15 minutes before it's like, this is dumb.
Yep.
And just never saw any reason to go back. And of course, now all you see is a litany of people complaining about people on Twitter and, you know, of course, the screenshots and all that. I imagine if it hadn't been for Trump using the platform the last 3 or 4 years, it would have faded off.
Oh, I think it would have died, dude. Yeah. I think it would have ended up MySpace.
Well, I mean, technically MySpace is still going. I mean, it's not anything like what it was. I think now it's trying to compete with SoundCloud of all things, but I guess LiveJournal technically never shut down either, but yeah, nobody cares. So I imagine that's what's going to happen with Twitter, is it's just going to fade off. And
well, look, that happened with Tumblr. They took porn away and suddenly it was gone. You know?
Yeah. Oh, you imagine somebody's going to make that same move at Twitter, and that'll be that.
Oh, dude, once they shut the kiddie porn and shit down on that place, it's over for them.
Well, if it's kiddie porn, it should be shut down.
Oh, that's fucking cute. Are you going to tell me YouTube are actually making inroads on their problems?
No. I'm not arguing from a point of reality. I'm arguing of a point of... Well, there's that hope again.
Oh, I've fully accepted that there are way more kitty diddlers out there than I would have ever anticipated.
No, it's just a small percent of the population. They're just very active on Twitter.
Right in the soul.
Yeah, I know. It fucking stings, dude. But, you know, you got to know where you are in reality sometimes to ground yourself. And unfortunately, sometimes that means hearing the truth. You know it's the truth because it makes you feel bad.
Well.
So what do you have for Digital Dojo?
All right. I've got a very interesting website that I've been enjoying exploring lately called cyberseek.org. So this thing is cool. It's scraped, basically, a bunch of data from various hiring and job posting websites. It's supported by the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education. So basically it's getting some funding from NIST and the U.S. government. But mostly it's scraping things like Dice, Indeed, Glassdoor, things like that, right? And they've got a bunch of partners they've got listed down here at the bottom here, including Burning Glass, CompTIA, Nice, CyberSeek. They've got a version for Australia. They've got a version for India. Oh, was that India or Indiana? I think that says that's just Indiana. Okay, I read that earlier and thought it was CyberSeek India because that made a lot more sense to me. But no, that's CyberSeek Indiana, and. In CyberSeek is Australia here, which is not loading. Oh well. Anyways, so what's cool about this is they've got this interactive map you can click on, and it shows you what states have, you know, and they're comparing data for roughly a year. Total security job openings versus people employed in cybersecurity in the state. So we're going to click on Texas just for fun here. Total cybersecurity job opens, 67,439 openings. Currently, they're employing 95,405 cybersecurity professionals in the state. So, yeah, you want jobs? There you go. What's even more fun is you can go and click on whether it's only public sector data, all data, and... you can actually narrow it down by what private sector. But when you scroll down, here's the really useful thing. Openings requesting certification. What certifications do you need to get a job in that state? CISB, of course, is number one. Then you got things like CISA, Security Plus, GIAC. Amusingly, I never see the Certified Ethical Hacker on here. I always find that amusing that you never see that one because they've tried so hard to get Certified Ethical Hacker to be the cert because they wanted it to compete with the CISP. But nope, everyone's looking for the CISP. So anyways, it's a fun set of data to explore. They're saying that, you know, it's been updated recently because of COVID-19 and they're not certain what that's, you know, really going to mean. But the other thing is they've got this career pathway, so you can actually click on some of these jobs, and it shows you what the average salary is for them. So, you know, if you're actually serious about getting into cybersecurity, it kind of shows you where to go with it, and just by looking at the salary alone, doesn't look like it's worth going into management. Just going to say. But, anyways, yeah, you got... you know, it even talks about feeder roles and, you know, things you can do to kind of get into it. But It's a fun little website. Lots of data to play with. But, anyways, thoughts? No?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right.
Cool for networking. Unfortunately, I don't have the credentials to use those to get those jobs.
Madman, you and I could do some work. You could get a lot of those credentials fairly quickly. Trust me. I bet we could get you half those credentials. We could get you the CompTIA stuff in like a year, no problem. I'm pretty sure. And the reason I say that, as opposed to 6 months, you have to schedule the tests. Sometimes you got to catch them when they're going.
Yeah,
but
I understand that.
You could probably pass the A+ now. The network plus, I work with you. We probably get you passing that one in a couple of months. Security plus, we'd have to look and see what's on it.
But I was going to say that's about knowing the systems.
Yeah, it is.
And then figuring out what's on the test so you can fucking practice for that.
Yeah, well, it's pretty much you buy the practice test apps on whatever, you know, mobile thing you use, and most of those are pretty good. And, you know, you can get on YouTube and find the trainings for free. But we're at the hour. So, Madman, closing thoughts.
Less productive link just got thrown in there. Classic games you can play on your browser. They have SimCity 2000.
Well, damn it. There goes my weekend. Are you closing thoughts?
Where do I find this link for the SimCity 2000 thing?
He threw it in the IRC.
Oh, okay. Can you throw it in the
TeamSpeak? Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, they've got Civ, they got World of Warcraft 2, Doom.
If you're looking for a movie this weekend, The First King, 2019. Very good movie. Is subtitled, so does require a little bit of education.
Okay. Oh, they have Sim Tower. There you go. That game was god awful.
Didn't say they were all good. But you can play them in your browser.
Anyways. This is DOSBox in a web browser, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Pretty close.
Good deal. Good deal. All right. Well, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site. The subreddit, which I haven't looked at in a bit, truth be told. But it is there. And if you ping me on there, I'll probably see it. No promise of a response. I'm not dumb enough to promise that. But anyways...
They have the Oregon Trail.
Which version?
Classic Edition.
Huh. Well, that's all we got, and I'm going to play sound effects and close this out.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Sounds good. Nose down and call it a night.
Gladys is dead to me now. I can have any blow-up doll I want.
Shut up, Wesley.